welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Cheltimer, and our guest this week, novelist and storyteller Janet Keller. Each week, we visit with a local author or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask them to introduce us to their work. We hope for a glimpse into their lives and to find out what prompts them to write. We invite them to read to us from their books, and this week we're very pleased to have Janet Keller as our guest again. Welcome, Janet.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
The tragic tales, outrageous gossip, and fascinating history of Ontario's Prince Edward County are all grist for the mill for writer and storyteller Janet Keller. And this is how she introduces herself on her website. Janet is a well-known historical mystery writer, as well as being a storyteller, performer, and the co-founder and organizer of the very successful festival, Women Killing It, held in Picton over the Labor Day weekend. Her latest novel in the Thaddeus Lewis series, set in the 1850s, The Untoward Assassin, has just been released. So, you've just published the seventh adventure of Thaddeus.
Yes.
Lewis, an itinerant Methodist preacher. Tell us a little about Thaddeus and how he became the protagonist of this very successful series.
Well, as you mentioned before, I was I'm also a storyteller, and I've always worked a great deal with the sort of legend and folklore and history of Prince Edward County, which is where I'm from. And in the process of searching for new stories and trying to nail some stuff down, I found this fascinating book at Picton Public Library, and it was called The Autobiography of Thaddeus Lewis. And it was published in 1865 in Picton, and it was this life story of Thaddeus, who was a saddlebag preacher for the Methodist Episcopal Church, and he details a lot of his adventures and talks about his life. And in the course of, maybe a page and a half in this autobiography, there was this incredible story of a girl who died in the village of Demarestville. It wasn't recognized as murder at the time. It subsequently proved to be murder. And Thaddeus reports this. It took 4 years, but this young man was being hanged for murdering a woman. And on the scaffold, he confessed not only to the murder that he was being executed for, but also to the murder of the girl in Demarestville and three other women. Time I can remember just being electrified by finding this, because this was a serial killer. Yeah. And this was in Upper Canada between the years of 1838 and 1842, right? Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to do something with the story, and I made brief attempts to try and nail it down in terms of doing something nonfiction, and the records are just gone. You can't find them. And so I thought, well, okay, this is going to be fictional. How am I going to approach this? This has got to be a mystery. That's all there is to it. And it's just up to me to sort out who the hero is going to be, really. And it just seemed logical to have Thaddeus be the hero. In a large part, because he was traveling. He had an excuse to travel. And these ministers used to get shunted from circuit to circuit. The longest they ever stayed on one circuit was 2 years. Mm-hmm. So he was in a perfect position to be the detective character, and that's where it really started.
When we first meet him, Thaddeus is based in Prince Edward County, your own stamping ground, where his family resides and where the first murders take place. Did you do a lot of research for your first books, and what did you concentrate on? The experiences of an itinerant minister, local history, or building the characters?
I was very lucky in that I had already done a lot of research on the early history of the Methodist Church in Upper Canada, mainly because I was asked to do some stuff for Picton United Church when they were celebrating their 200th anniversary. So I was able to approach this by first of all seeing what kind of local history I could incorporate into the book. Mm-hmm. And then I really started to take a look at the characters. Very first book, which is called On the Head of a Pin, follows a great deal of the autobiography. And so, in a certain sense, the plot was kind of already laid down for me. So I could really concentrate on Thaddeus and what kind of man that he was. I very quickly discovered that I had to make him more modern. everything within the autobiography indicated that he was a man who operated from his religious principles. So yeah. I had to make him start to operate more from a set of personal ethics. That made him both far more interesting as a character, far more modern as a character, but it also made him a lot more likable as a character.
Do you find yourself doing more and more research for your books, and do you travel more now?
I do more and more research, particularly when I'm taking him to a place that is a different geography. For example, at one point, he in the burying ground, he ended up in Yorkville in Toronto. And there is absolutely no point in going there. Absolutely nothing left. So in that particular instance, I found old maps just absolutely invaluable. And fortunately, there are a lot of books out there with old maps of Toronto and regions. Also, McGill University has a digital online collection of county maps. These are, you know, they show like the lots and have the names penciled in of who's there. That was really valuable as well.
What are the most enjoyable aspects of your research and what the most frustrating?
I basically am a research junkie. I love the research. And I frequently hit a point where I go, you know, oh, come on, you found out what you were looking for 3 hours ago. Stop following links, you know, and get back to work. What happens with the research is that you will find a little piece of information that leads you onto something else and onto something else and onto something else. And all of a sudden, you found this little piece that is absolutely perfect to fill out the plot that you're currently working on. And I love those moments. And then you start cross-referencing it and you find out, you know, another little piece, and all of a sudden things slot together and your plot starts to make sense and you go, hallelujah, it's a book. It's frustrating when that doesn't happen. It's frustrating when you're looking for a piece of information and it just isn't there. And when you're dealing with historical works, that happens more often than you might think.
Okay, well, how about reading to a new book?
Okay, this section deals with the slums of Toronto, and I think we're going to talk a little bit later about the House of Industry. Well, this kind of describes the sort of people that the House of Industry was set up to help. Thaddeus ends up back in Yorkville, and he teams up again, he makes contact again with his old friend Morgan Spicer. And Morgan has been set to work going out through the slummy part of Toronto and looking for people who need help, which they actually did. The House of Industry was no joke. But it was set up to deal with the infirm, the aged, orphan children, deserted children. So it was not a workhouse in the same sense. They were basically looked after there. And also, unlike the English houses of industry, the Toronto one also provided outdoor relief, which meant that you didn't have to go into the poorhouse to get help. If you were on the skids, you could be recommended for some help, and they would give you some coal and some soup and some bread in the hopes that you could get back on your feet and then go in and find some work somewhere. It wasn't the Oliver Twist kind of workhouse that we all kind of think of. It was actually kind of neat.
Okay.
The gentlemen of the city of Toronto were the ones who were supposed to go out every week through the slums, and they handed that off pretty quick. And Morgan Spicer is one of the people that it has been handed off to. And so Thaddeus goes with him, and this is just kind of a description of what they find. So they're down in St. John's Ward, which is just starting to become really, really slummy. Later on, it gets just unbelievable down in St. John's Ward in Toronto. The worst part of it, Macaulaytown, had grown on what were supposed to have been spacious park lots for those with the means to build mansions. Too many of the owners had been unable to resist partitioning the lots and selling them off, and now weather-beaten wooden buildings huddled under the imposing shadow of Osgoode Hall, the seat of all things legal in Canada West. It was a neighborhood of shacks and sheds and dilapidated tenements that had over the years acquired both a permanent look and an air of imminent collapse. A lot of the people living here now work at the breweries and the brickworks and the new factories, Morgan said, but there are a lot who fan out to the farms in the spring and come back here when the harvest is over. Sometimes they don't have enough to make it through the winter and find themselves in dire straits. Are you just looking for the people who need to go to the House of Industry, or the ones who need outdoor relief as well? Thaddeus asked. Both. Generally speaking, the House of Industry takes only those who have no hope of finding work. The sick, the injured, the elderly, the orphans. Our job is to figure out who should go in and who just needs a little help. Are there many of them? Thaddeus asked. Enough. Some of them are new immigrants, but most of them are just people who have fallen on hard times. The African community tends to look after its own, and so do the Catholics. The Catholic Church is talking about building their own poorhouse, mainly because of the numbers of Irish needing it, I guess. But we don't ask about religion. We just try to look after whoever we find. In Thaddeus's opinion, nearly everyone they saw needed help. Too many people were crammed into buildings never meant to accommodate so many. Some of them were never meant to accommodate people at all, but had been converted from chicken houses and pigsties, tucked away in backyards next to overflowing, stinking privies. There were children everywhere, swarming to beg a penny, years of accumulated dirt on their underfed bodies. Spicer shooed all but one of them away. "Do you have anybody for me today, Bucky?" "There's a lady in the back room over there," the boy said, pointing off to his right. "At the end of the hall. She's in a sad state with little ones. Nobody knows who she is. Hunkered down there last week." Spicer handed over a coin. "Thanks. Keep your eyes peeled, will you?" The boy nodded and scurried off, clutching his money. "I hate to send so many away with nothing," Spicer said, "but generally speaking, the ones that are healthy enough to beg aren't the ones that need the most help. There's only so much relief to go around." His face was grim. "Bucky's pretty reliable. The rest of them won't tell me anything for a penny." They walked over to a two-story wooden house that looked as though it would fall over in the next gust of wind. One end of the foundation had sunk, and the roof beams were twisted as a result. The cladding was weathered and gray and split in places, and to Thaddeus's astonishment, the front door and all of the windows had either been removed or never installed in the first place. "Is this building derelict?" he asked. "There can't be anybody living here, can there?" "All sorts of people live here," Spicer said. "It's regularly rented out." "But there are no windows." "No, apparently the landlord removed them. I don't know why." The front door led to a narrow, evil-smelling hallway with rooms on either side. There were no doors here, either. Nor were there any people, although there were plenty of signs of habitation. Bits of rag scattered here and there, ashes piled up in makeshift grates, a grubby torn corset, a shoe with a hole in the bottom of it. Nothing of value was left behind while those who lived here worked, or looked for work, or simply fled out onto the street, only to return at night to huddle against the cold.
Thank you, Janet.
Thank you.
Really interesting introduction to the city there. So now we'll take a short break.